Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
When my parents went through this nasty divorce, my sister and I were caught in the middle. We were kind of left on our own quite a bit to figure things out. My parents were both struggling with their own demons, and they were trying to pick their lives back up together.
For a lot of us, there's a moment in our adolescence where we actively fight for more freedom from our parents. But then there are kids like Ashley who wake up one day and suddenly find themselves with too much freedom.
I did not have a curfew. I don't remember from the time that my parents got divorced ever having to be home at a certain time.
From PureX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. And today, the tale of a girl who sets out on a voyage to discover where the wild things are, and not the kind Marie Sendak imagined.
I found it definitely kind of exciting and fun. We were in the middle of East St. Paul, kind of without specific guidance and rules and accountability.
By the time I turned 13, my parents were dealing with their own battles, and I spent a lot of time with my sisters and my cousins and my friends. We made awful decisions. We were generally up to no good, and we were fearless. May 22nd. Hey, average weekend at Dad's. It was Nikki's birthday, so we had a little party. I met this kid named, Moses. Well, I don't know his name, but me and Teresa called him Moses because Moses broke the Ten Commandments over his head, and that's why this kid only has one tooth. He is some horny kid, and I beat him in chess, and now he owes me $5. May 25th, 2000. Hola. Yesterday I slept at the Rivets. The Rivets are my cousins, who I ended up spending a lot of time with at this age, and they lived in East St. Paul. I met the kids that live next door, Dane, Derek, and Tim. Dane is a hottie. He looks like he's 7. I wrote that. I liked him, and once I told Nikki that I thought he was hot, she got all over him. They got something going on. Oh yeah, and I found out that she's giving Tim blowjobs. But anyway, they're pretty cool. Derek is the coolest. He's nice, don't smoke nothing, and he's fun. Julie got us candy bars. There were 2 Kit Kats. I stole one, and he just looked at me and said, "Kit Kats are your favorite too?" He's pretty cute too. Tim was biking fast and ran straight into a street pole and flung off his bike. Then Derek flung off his bike because he was laughing too hard. It was the funniest damn thing for serious. Then we had to go in, so Nikki snuck out the window to grab the wallet that she threw and to say goodbye to Derek. She got her wallet and threw it back in the window and from across the driveway. Now I got a bruise on my face because the wallet hit my face. Cool. Gotta go. May 29th, 2000. Wow, lots to say. On Friday, I went to the Rivets. All weekend, we stayed at the neighbors. Tim and Derek and Dane came over. Oh yeah, and so did Maurice, Tim's cousin. This weekend, I seen all their dicks except for Dane's.
Ha ha ha!
I didn't see them on purpose.
One of them, like, was outside and they had gotten really sweaty. So they had made a decision to put deodorant down in that region to kind of help with the sweatiness. And two of them did it simultaneously and fell over because it burned them so bad. So that's actually like the reason why I partially saw that happen. But I think that like in my 13-year-old brain, I was like, ooh, guess what? One notch off my belt. I thought that all teenage boys were the types of boys that I knew at that time. So all of them were players because that's the way that all teenage boys are. So when one of them would give me like a glimmer of like, I'm actually kind of nice, I thought that he was like, I am different and I am capable of loving somebody.
Anyways, Dane is the absolute hottest kid I've ever met. Seth Green, Edward Furlong, Brad Renfro, they don't even compare. Dane has got, and I want you guys to picture this, Dane has got sandy blonde hair, a scar down his face, and one eye opens wider than the other. And he is still the hottest kid I've ever seen. I swear, that kid loves to cuddle. But anyways, we sat on the couch together in Tim's basement, and before I left, we kissed. I can't stop thinking about it. I've got to see him again. I know he's a player. This kid was 11. But I don't even give a shit. He's a drug dealer, too. It will take a lot more than that to get me mad at him. It is not possible. He's too fine. This is a kid I could get obsessed with. I already am. On the 2 million hottest guys list, Dane fits every spot for real. P.S. I will always remember Dane. Not because he's sweet. Not because I love him. Just because he's him, and he ain't no hater. KDWB top songs today. Number 5, the thong song. Number 4, some stupid song about graduating fucking high school. Number 3, y'all gonna make me lose my mind. Number 2, every little thing I do. And number 1, Eminem, the real Slim Shady. June 13th, 2000. I was depressed because Dane and I were making out and I totally stopped it. It went too far. I don't care what Dane says. I made the right choice, right? I wish I had someone to lift my confidence. I shouldn't worry. I didn't love Dane, much less know his last name.
I remember being scared to death that I was going to get pregnant. I just realized, like, looking back on these journals, that I really had no idea what I was talking about. It ended with Dane when we picked up and moved to Wisconsin. We moved in with our cousins after my mother and my ex aunt decided that they were going to move in together with all of us kids and get out of Minnesota completely. So even though we were in a completely different location, we still had a core foundation to begin our new lives together. And we ended up just meeting people along the way that kind of had the same codes as we did, and we hung out with them. We were kind of wild children. And I don't know that anybody would have been able to contain us at that point.
Last night, we were at Katie's house, and we started a war with the neighbor kids. We were going to drop off some hate mail in this kid's mailbox before there was email. And we made some letters that say stuff like, "Your dick's small." and how they're all pubic munchers. On the way to his mailbox, we ran into him and John. They were going to Katie's house to mess stuff up at her house. Me and Katie ran to the mailbox, and they ran to Katie's. Then we booked it back to Katie's before they could do any damage, but they were already upstairs. They were dumping perfume everywhere, so we had to regulate. Even though I didn't care that much. They ran away, but Katie caught John and strangled him and held him hostage for 5 minutes till he realized no one was coming back to save him. So then John kicked Katie and ran away. Rory and John came back and threw moldy food on the porch. I threw eggs at Rory. To end my story, it was a long and hateful war. We weren't hit too hard, but they were hit with eggs, water, and went home to a mailbox full of hate mail, kitty litter, microwave chocolate, milk, and some other crap. August 8, 2000. I was at my cousin Nikki's house, and her friend Shannon was over. It was like 11 p.m., and they asked Julie if they could go to Subway. Julie said yeah, and made them promise to be back by midnight. They asked if I wanted to go too, and I did, but by the time we got to Subway, it was going on midnight. They wouldn't let me walk back alone, so I just started walking towards downtown Minneapolis with them. At midnight. Later that night, everyone walked me halfway home until I knew where I was. They told me Nikki's house was 2 blocks away, and I started walking by myself. Before I knew it, an hour had gone by. And I knew where I was, but I was confused. Normally, I would have made it back easy, but I think I was fish bowling from all the weed they were smoking at the house. Anyways, I found some old guy and asked him where I was. And so he gave me a ride, and I was like 2 miles from Nikki's. I trusted this guy because I saw he had a wife and kids. I got home at like 6 a.m. and I got in big shit. Oh well.
I actually was not scared. I was more frustrated because I walked around in a neighborhood that I wasn't familiar with for a really long time. I was mad at myself that I couldn't make it home on my own. Not being able to find my home probably just speaks to how transient my home became. I mean, I see that metaphor now in my life, but at that moment, I was lost emotionally, physically, definitely lost.
So as I got older, I wasn't as impressed by people who didn't smoke, and I pretty much stopped caring altogether. September 15th, 2002, age 15. Hey, well, this week was crazy. On Wednesday, I got up at like 6 a.m., went to school, work, and then home. Me and Kelsey decided to stay up all night watching MTV Jams and went to school in the morning. Then I went to work. When I got home, Amanda was over with some of her brother's Adderall. We snorted a bunch and stayed up all night. Sorry, Mom. I took another pill around 5 a.m. and I went to school. I ate dinner and got wasted. All in all, I was awake for like 70 hours and it was great. I don't feel like writing anymore and Harley is fucking hot. October 12th. I slept till 10 a.m. and everyone came over to play fucking video games. Then John called me and asked if I wanted to go to a show. John and Gavin picked me up in a big van and asked when I had to be home. Since I never really have to be home, they said, sweet, because we're driving down to Madison to see a band. Very damn awesome. So after a 4-fucking-hour drive, a shitload of coffee, a box of old-school Jawbreakers and Adderall, we got to Madison. The show started at 9:30, and the first few bands sucked ass, so we made mine... wine trips to the car and met people until Melt Banana came on. I was moshing and went all crazy until this bitch punched me in the stomach. But it was all right. The whole show was a rush. We hung around at some chick's house after until like 4 a.m. and drove back, and I got home just in time for my community service at Goodwill.
there was quite a few years between up until I was in fourth grade where my parents were together. Our life was fairly stable. And once that got broken, I think I always longed for that. And where my other friends, some of them did settle for the way that their lives were, and that was okay, and that's okay for them. And I was kind of stuck in this, the middle ground somewhere where I really wasn't content with the way that my life was, and I did want to change it. I wanted to be in a stable place.
So by the time I was 17, I started to realize that I needed to get my life together. Or at the very least, I needed to make some money. And even though I knew this, my entries are surprisingly shallow from here on out, because I wrote in the Army, and I said nothing about that. That entire year, I wrote nothing about it.
So I kind of thought, if I ever had a shot at changing this, if I ever had a shot at going to college and making the right choices, this might be it. After I graduated high school, I went to basic training, and all of a sudden I was in this world that was extremely regimented and had a completely different set of rules and codes and values. And it was really eye-opening to me, not only because it was different, but because I was good at it. We deployed to Iraq in 2009. We did military police work. We worked at a theater internment facility. It was right outside of Baghdad at Camp Cropper. We did have some moments in Iraq that were that got a little bit heated. There was some incoming fire a couple times, and there was a riot at one point in the compound that we were working in. And again, oddly enough, I was not fearful in those moments, and I think that I was used to like this emotional instability, and I was used to this chaos. To me, it was so much less stressful than the day-to-day that I had came from.
So my teenage years were a struggle, and in so many ways, I was lost. And when I initially found these journals, I felt compelled to share them with Mortified, because I know that teenagers get lost. They get so fucking lost. I went from a crazy childhood into the Army, college, a deployment to the Middle East, grad school. And regardless of my awful taste in men when I was 13, I found myself an amazing husband. He's someone who loves me for exactly who I am. And I really think that was all I was ever looking for. Thanks.
That was Ashley, reading aloud her childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness, in the Twin Cities at the Amsterdam. And now there's more to the story in our postmortem, FIDE. We caught up with Ashley after the show and found out that for her, rereading her teenage journals as an adult wasn't exactly a lighthearted trip down memory lane.
My husband and I just had our first daughter, and I knew that these journals were in my closet. And my intention was to go upstairs, look through these journals, and throw them away, because there was no part of me that wanted my daughter to ever know the way that I grew up and the choices that I made.
The girl Ashley discovered in her journals caught her completely off guard.
I look back at those journals and I'm like, who is this girl? What was she thinking? What was she doing? I was definitely a very vulnerable child, you know, when my parents were together, and when they broke up, I put up a lot of walls. I put up a lot of walls, and I took to things that made me feel stronger. I was so scared, I think, of being hurt. I was so scared of people really getting to know the real person that I was and understanding how vulnerable I probably was, like, deep inside, but I didn't want anybody to see that because it was hurting.
Whereas most teenagers might feel stronger when they're safe, Ashley began to get her strength by putting herself in danger.
I would binge drink. I would drink and drive, even before I had a license. I would take my mom's car. I would sneak out of the house. I would steal. I would go into the store, and they would have the ink tags on them that if you broke them apart, ink would splatter on like your clothes or the person. And we would take the whole thing and we would like cut a hole in the side of the shirt or whatever we were going to take and just push the whole ink tag through so that it was still together and you could leave it in the dressing room and then put on, you know, the clothes you walked in with over whatever you intended on taking and walk out.
Living dangerously may have made Ashley feel invincible, but it turns out invincibility may not have been the kind of strength she was looking for.
When I was on that deployment, I didn't drink, and it helped me realize how to connect with people, I think, better. The Army taught me a lot about relationships, depending on other people and teamwork, and that took some vulnerability on my part that I was not willing to give up prior to joining the Army.
And after years of searching for safety as a teenager, you probably won't be surprised when you find out what Ashley does for a living nowadays.
My job now in the manufacturing environment I work in is to assess workstations for risk and help keep our employees as safe as possible.
And safety isn't just something Ashley provides for her coworkers.
My ultimate goal is to make sure that my daughter has, you know, the same safety and security in her life, you know, that I feel now but didn't have then.
Before we said goodbye to Ashley, we wanted to know, will she ever share her journals with her daughter?
There's a part of me that still wants to throw them out, because if I died tomorrow, my poor daughter would not know the person I am now. She would look back at these 13-year-old journals when I talk about Adderall and penises, and that's what she'd know about me. So part of me still wants to burn them.
To share the shame, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode. And even if you have no ambition to share your old writings with the world, we encourage everyone out there to find something you created as a kid, anything. Even if that says,
and how they're all pubic munchers.
And share it with just one friend. It's fun, it's scary, and we promise you'll discover something new about yourself in the conversation that follows. As many of you know, the Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. Thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. If your company would like to support our podcast, we would absolutely love that. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Shelby El Otmani, Hadley Dion, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. Stories were produced for the stage by Amanda Zwierink. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake Snake Snakes. Big thanks to Madeline Cohen, Lance Roberts Studios, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived.